leaving the Kindle to dominate the market. During the same time that Borders failed to embrace the e-reader, Amazon sold 43.7 million of the Kindle devices. Barnes & Noble fully embraced the Nook e-reader, and it thrives as a competitor to the Kindle. The simple reason for Borders' failure is that Amazon put them out of business. But Barnes & Noble survived. Books A Million survived, and currently operates 260 stores. Half Price Books survived, Hudson News survived, as did many others. To contrast those that have endured, Books A Million opened their website in 1998, a full 10 years before Borders even tried. Developing your decisiveness is key to seizing the power of now and stepping into the future. Those who take action reap rewards. And in an era where shift happens quickly, reflective urgency is key. Reactive urgency is simply acting too quickly without critical thought. This leads to ignoring the importance of intention and keeping the vision in view. Many companies have been guilty of reactive urgency. Launching a new product, for example, without any relationship to its core values or critical thinking leads to disaster. Attempting to jump into the billion-dollar bottled water bandwagon, Coors Brewing Company introduced Coors Rocky Mountain Sparkling Water. This was their first non-alcoholic beverage since the Prohibition era and was a case of reactive urgency. There is also deliberative non-urgency, where the company deliberates the benefits of action for such a long time that when they finally do act, it's too little, too late. Borders finally putting up a website 10 years after every single other book retailer had done so demonstrated the prime example of deliberative non-urgency. Now, reflective urgency, on the other hand, is based on knowing one's intentions, setting and evaluating one's goals, and taking actions that produce transformation. Reflective urgency comes from understanding that extreme deviations from core products, values, or industry trends also leads to disaster. Asking fundamental questions of yourself can also help develop reflective urgency. Questions such as, what are my intentions? And, am I reflecting the strengths of my team in my decisions? These types of questions will generate reflective urgency, gaining foresight for the completion of the goals. This differs from what we commonly refer to as, quote, gut instinct. This primitive trait is an evolutionary strategy that helps us recognize friend or foe. Gut feelings are a holdover of tribal loyalty development. Gut instinct is an emotional response. As a therapist, my biggest battle over the years has been with clients that I've had to convince that feelings are not the same things as facts. As a professor, I can attest that intention is a decision-making reflex that cannot replace reflective urgency skill development. Without a doubt, the most effective way to develop the skill of reflective urgency is silence. In silence, we can listen. Not only to the words of others on our team, but we can also sort through the streams of information, often with conflicting messages that barrage our computer monitors and smartphones each day. I have tracked that ever-increasing messages and pieces of information that come to me each day. I get barraged with about 600 personal messages per day, including emails, social media accounts, text messages, etc. Now that doesn't include the countless and meaningless ads we all get, estimated as up to as many as 4,000 per day. Now, add the tens of thousands of ponderous thoughts that are mulling around in our own heads each day, many of which research shows are negative thoughts, many people feel a sense of overload from all the information and stimuli, and the trend lately has been to, quote, unplug. But even while on vacation, many people stay in touch with their messages. Depending on their online activity while on vacation, you can even get more messages, ads, and mental demands. Meditation to clear one's thoughts has been advocated. But it has been my experience that the number one reason why people can't get into the practice of meditation is that they find it impossible to still their thoughts. And herein lies the problem. A fish swims in water. It doesn't know it swims in water because it's always in water. It has never been out of water. And people are like fish, but instead of swimming in water, people swim in thoughts. To demand a fish to get out of the water is as unnatural as a person getting out of their thoughts. The silence of reflective urgency is not detachment. It's about two skills. First, staying in the moment, which is why mindfulness meditation has become the most popular form of meditation in America. It does not demand that we get out of our metaphorical water, but that we just let a thought be a thought. The key in mindfulness meditation is not in not thinking, but in not following a thought and projecting it into the future. The second skill is listening without judgment. I'm not talking about the judgment of whether this is good or bad or the judgment of other people here, but rather a judgment that says a thought, feeling, or sensation needs an immediate response. Although a fish will always be in the water, if you see a koi pond in the evening, the fish are very still. Now they're still in the water, but appear almost motionless. By practicing ways to not be judgmental, you can let a thought just be a thought, and an emotion just be an emotion. Years ago, I was driving with my teenage son from Tulsa to Wichita. It's a long and boring 3-hour drive. We planned to eat healthy food at our favorite Thai restaurant once we arrived in Wichita. We were about 80 miles from our destination when I stopped for gas at the Turnpike Service Center. While filling the tank, my son jumped out of the car and said he was going to get a burger. I asked him why, since he knew we would be at the Thai restaurant in a little over an hour. And he said, "Don't worry, Dad, I'm a growing boy. I can eat twice." Now, our goal at that time, if you recall, was to eat healthy, and McDonald's just didn't seem compatible with our present goal. So I said to him, "Okay, if you must, but you're being judgmental." He then said, "Judgmental?" I said, "Yes, judgmental. You have noticed your hunger, and you have judged it, coming to the conclusion that you must make it go away now, even if it means eating something that is not healthy." He responded, "How is that judgmental? I'm hungry now, and I'm going to eat a burger." I then responded, "I did not tell you not to. I was just pointing out that you are judging your hunger rather than just letting your hunger be hunger." "What is that supposed to mean?" he asked with irritation. I responded by saying, "It means that you have not let hunger just be hunger. It's a part of your digestive process, and something that is neither good nor bad, but just is." So once I finished pumping the gas and was back in my car, my son soon opened the door and empty-handedly jumped into the car. I asked him what happened to the burger. He said, "Just drive. I'll wait until we get to Wichita." I'm pretty sure he muttered something under his breath about having a psychotherapist for a dad and then put on his headphones. How do we listen without judgment? Is it really all about practicing acceptance? What follows is a short dissertation I wrote to help those practicing reflective urgency to practice acceptance. The paradox is that when something is accepted as just being what it is, it then holds no power. Depression, loneliness, hunger, fear, or even withdrawal become unimportant when accepted. When it becomes unimportant, it becomes just what it is. It is something experienced rather than something I fight or hate, or something that I'm restricted by or obsessed with. I can find freedom from suffering. Depression is not a problem. Hunger is not a problem. Withdrawal is not a problem. Loneliness is not a problem. It is only a problem if I make it one. These things let me know that I am a human being, not a human doing. Happiness would suck if life had no depression. Security would suck if we had no sense of fear to put it in perspective. Difficult times and experiences are part of any valued path. Difficulties and even pain are not to be avoided if one wants a truly meaningful life. They are simply things to accept, because in acceptance, we give no power to control, and it becomes the pathway of being a full human being participating fully in life. The heart of reflective urgency is intention. Remember the importance of intention in the previous chapters? In reflective urgency, we are taking decisive action, but what is it reflecting? It is reflecting our intentions. It is reflecting our why. Why do we sell? Or why do we build? Why do we do what we do for work? In his book titled Start With Why, author Simon Sinek turns around our understanding of good marketing and moves the reader from the features and benefits of a product or service to the why of the product or service. He shares the success story of Apple in defining themselves not by how they build computers or what they build, but rather why they build, to be innovative. He also gives the example of a company that, despite having the necessary resources, failed to make a profit. That company is TiVo. They prided themselves on building the best products on the market. And the problem with that is that they never differentiated themselves from the clones who made similar products. TiVo loaded us up with what they built, but not the why. Sinek seems to conclude that if they had led with the why, they would have been marketed as a company who lets you have total control over your life. In the case of reflective urgency, the why really matters. It lets you take action in the moment while fulfilling your intention. I sold Hondas and Nissans when I was an undergraduate. As I gravitated towards counseling and psychology, I began to envision myself as a car counselor. I shifted from the idea of selling cars because it was my job to one of helping people find the right car for their family. I found car sales to be a way for me to practice my intention of being a good therapist before I had a chance to do actual counseling. The results were amazing. I began to see every customer as someone I could help. Once I shifted my thinking, I ended up each month as the highest grossing salesman. A carman, who was hired at about the same time I was, sold cars to make money. Now, he soon became the top salesman on the team, and on the average, he would sell twice as many cars as everyone else. I, however, made more money than the rest of the sales staff, including carman. It was the why that created my intention. Here are seven things to reflect on when making decisions. Number one, why does it matter? Number two, why do we care? Number three, why do we lead? Number four, why do we succeed? Number five, why do we do what we do? Number six, why will this engage others? And number seven, why is the team involved? These questions will help you to master your intentions and reflect quickly on the decisions that must be made. After defining one's why, we must next look at what and how. This is most effectively enhanced by the why of intention. There are many other questions that leaders can ask to help take decisive action. These include questions such as, what is the meaning to the stakeholders created by the product or action? What is the context of the decision? How does the action impact the vision of the organization? And how does the product contribute to community at every level? Trust yourself. The heart of developing decisiveness is learning to trust yourself. For new leaders in positions where their actions will be judged against the performance of others, maintaining the status quo is a powerful temptation. But no action is an action, an action that most often results in the opposite of what one desires. It is also the opposite of what it means to harness viral leadership. Katrina Lake was told by her professors at Harvard Business School that her idea of an online clothing retailer was an inventory nightmare. And she quotes one venture capitalist as saying, quote, I just don't understand why anyone would want anything like this, unquote. But Lake proved them all wrong when Stitch Fix posted their 2016 revenue of $730 million, and her 2017 revenue was almost $1 billion. How did she do it? By trusting in herself, her vision, and the science behind online clothing sales. Now, her business is not unique. Selling clothing is a crowded field, and many people have a dislike for online clothes shopping. But Lake's idea was to leverage the power of analytics and couple it with a human touch to create loyal customers who would pay top dollar for clothing curated by both real-life designers and powerful algorithms. The business she created, Stitch Fix, is as much a technology company as it is a retailer or a clothier, and her use of data science to know the customer, build loyalty, and create vital enthusiasm is powerful. Lake crafted the idea while contrasting the death of brick-and-mortar Blockbuster and the growth of online movie provider Netflix. Eric Colson from Netflix joined her team as Chief Algorithms Officer in 2012. Today, Stitch Fix employs data scientists and real-life fashion consultants create a unique desire among consumers of products. Stitch Fix now designs its own brand, Hybrid Designs, to meet the desires and demands of customers whose secret preferences are now being revealed by the algorithm. This company is as much a futuristic data science company as it is a retailer. And now it has the revenues to prove the naysayers wrong. Because at its core, Katrina Lake believed in both science and herself. Many long-term leaders frequently fail to trust themselves. They perhaps feel that they got lucky before and they don't want to break their winning streak. By doing something new or harnessing a viral moment, they begin to cultivate a scarcity mentality, believing that success is infrequent and should be preserved and rationed rather than continuously pursued. Back in the 1980s, Stuart Smalley, a character on Saturday Night Live, used to sit in front of the mirror and say, quote, "I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me," unquote. That was his affirmation to himself. It was a Saturday night skit that really spoofed self-help programs and the whole affirmation movement. Now, I love affirmations. I think they can be a great tool in positive psychology. I think Stuart Smalley may have been funny, but Stuart Smalley got it correct. Affirmations, when used well, are extremely effective. The reason why is simple. Anybody who's been practicing cognitive behavioral therapy knows that we need to counter cognitive errors. The most effective way to counter cognitive errors is with the truth, and those truths can become affirmations. Outside of any 12-step meeting, you'll see cars with bumper stickers reading, quote, "Just for today," or "One day at a time," unquote. Those are affirmations. Those affirmations have become one of the most important elements of the success of 12-step programs. Why? Because they are effective counters to cognitive errors. At the current time, our cultural awareness of the value of affirmations has moved beyond Stuart Smalley and now focuses on the law of attraction. You may recognize some of these phrases. Like attracts like, or birds of a feather flock together. In his book titled The Power of I Am and the Law of Attraction, my co-author R.J. Banks states, quote, "We are and attract into our lives what we choose to think, say, and believe about ourselves and our perceived reality," unquote. These are examples of affirmations or positive self-talk. Similarly, a lot of the leaders I train are familiar with the power of the word from their study of the biblical creation account. It begins, of course, in Genesis with God speaking. This creation story is reflected both in Christian tradition as well as the stories of other cultures. In Buddhism, one aspect of the Eightfold Path, called the Samavaka, is often translated to English as right speech. The more accurate rendering is wise speech, or even skilled speech, which hopefully suggests speech that is acquired through practice. The power of affirmations. Not only does our culture, whether it's Saturday Night Live, books and movies about the law of attraction, or religious sculptures, talk about the power of the spoken word. Philosophers and metaphysicians in the past 100 years have written profoundly on the subject. Charles Kennell, who is an industrialist and the founder of the St. Louis Port Dispatch newspaper, wrote these words, quote, "Thought is energy. Active thought is active energy. Concentrated thought is a concentrated energy, and thought concentrated on a definite purpose becomes power." William Walker Atkinson, a metaphysician and philosopher from the early 1900s, wrote, "The best way to overcome undesirable or negative thoughts and feelings is to cultivate the positive ones." In the early 60s, Earl Nightingale was awarded the very first golden record for his spoken word album titled The Strangest Secret, and his message was, quote, "We become what we think about most of the time," unquote. How do we use affirmations? Of course, affirmations can be repeated daily, like a rosary, but there are many other ways to use affirmations. None of my clients ever leave my office without this set of instructions. I give them a dry erase marker, telling them to take this dry erase marker home and write a positive affirmation on the bathroom mirror. That way, the first thing that they see in the morning and the last thing they see at night, and something that they see repeatedly throughout the day, is the counter to their cognitive error staring back at them in their own handwriting. This can become a powerful technique and simple method for helping our clients make changes. If you don't have a drawer full of dry erase markers, go buy them in bulk from the office supply store. I guarantee you, even if they don't believe it when they wrote it, they will test the affirmation to find if it's true, and it will almost always result in drastic change. R.J. Banks offers his clients his, quote, "My Morning Affirmations," unquote, a list of extremely effective I am affirmations to start one's day with. They are, "I am happy. I am healthy. I am wealthy. I am loved. I am secure. I am worthy. I am forgiving. I am forgiven. I am blessed. I am grateful. I am beautiful. I am confident. I am courageous. And I am excited about today." I also ask my coaching clients to put their affirmations on a screensaver on their computer as well. Anyone can create their own screensaver in just about 2 minutes. Affirmations can be shared as a Facebook status too. It's amazing how the social reinforcement, the quote, likes, in response to posting a positive affirmation, can make that affirmation come alive. Interestingly, there is a ton of research showing that it's true. The quote, likes are a very important part of psychological phenomena. With such great advancements in technology, audio affirmation programs have become extremely popular. Whether it be while driving, walking, exercising, meditating, or whatever the situation, people can listen to their audio affirmation programs anytime they desire. Epilogue. The result is lasting transformation in business. Chapter 14. Activating the power of now. Peter Drucker famously said, quote, "The best way to predict the future is to create it," unquote. By focusing on the potential of viral leadership, you are creating the future by harnessing the power of now. Drucker also said, quote, "Long-term planning does not deal with future decisions, but with the future of present decisions," unquote. Viral leadership is important because it is the form of leadership most likely to frame decisions as creating the future, and it's the form of leadership that focuses on futurity. In his book titled Management, Tasks, Practices, and Responsibilities, Drucker writes, quote, Strategic planning does not deal with future decisions. It deals with the futurity of present decisions. Decisions only exist in the present. The question that faces the strategic decision maker is not what his organization should do tomorrow. It is, what do we have to do today to be ready for an uncertain tomorrow? The question is not what will happen in the future. It is, what futurity do we have to build into our present thinking and doing? What time spans do we have to consider? And how do we use this information to make a rational decision now? Unquote. Viral leadership is the approach to leadership that makes actionable the idea that decisions only exist in the present. There is no such thing as future decisions to be made. How many times have you been in a meeting where something was tabled so that future decisions could be made? But we don't know what the future holds. If anyone could predict the future with certainty, they would be the ruler of the world. To focus on future decisions is to miss the power of now. Today creates the future. Viral leadership understands that. The outcome of our now decisions let us flow with the unlimited possibilities that will emerge. As leadership transforms others and contributions are added, resources become generated and viral excitement creates now opportunities. Business is one of the most creative, ingenious, and resourceful endeavors known to mankind. Yes, art, music, and literature are creative, but business changes mankind in a different way. Ancient and modern man-made wonders of the world, such as the Great Pyramids of Giza, the Great Wall of China, Stonehenge, etc., are all awe-inspiring. But Microsoft, Walmart, and Toyota Motor Company are all equally as amazing. The Japanese construction company Kongo Gumeiko has been in business since 578 A.D. It has been family-owned and operated continuously for over 1,400 years. Now, they are still in business to this day. The Royal Mint in the UK has been in business for over 1,150 years. In America, there are several businesses over 200 years old. There's a pretty good chance that while you're reading this book, that you're wearing a Brooks Brothers shirt, or at least have one in the closet. They have been filling our closets for over 200 years. In 1795, Jacob Beam created and sold his first barrel of whiskey. Colgate toothpaste hit the shelves in 1873, but the company had been in business selling soap and candles since 1806. According to their website, the company today has more than $15 billion and sells its products in over 200 countries and territories worldwide. The foundation of any successful company's longevity can almost always be traced to an explosive enthusiasm that captured the moment. Today we call these aha moments. Building upon the initial enthusiasm through effective leadership, one can transform society and create something sustaining. This is the very nature of viral leadership. Viral leadership is necessary because it transforms people and cultures. Can you imagine how life would be entirely different if Microsoft had never existed? Without Microsoft, we would largely be using bucket-specific applications rather than cross-platform user experiences. Everything would be different. From the personal PC that most everyone on the planet uses today, to the entire foundation of business communication, product development, and how people interact, Microsoft plays a major role in everybody's daily life. Would you even have the same career doing what you do if Microsoft never existed? Viral leadership is your pathway to seizing the moment and potentially impacting billions of people with something that changes every aspect of life. We can't go any further in our discussion about life-changing viral leadership without discussing Facebook. Facebook is clearly the epitome of modern-day viral impact and a legacy of changing lives. History will look back at the profound nature of Facebook, perhaps with goodwill, or perhaps with harsh judgment. Either way, there can be no doubt how Zuckerberg's creation has impacted just about everything in our modern culture, from election results on a global level to its influence on the family. In the UK, 33% of divorce petitions contained the word Facebook. Facebook also disrupted the way small businesses advertise. It has changed communication and broken the monopoly email once had over personal communications, while memes have become a form of moral police. These are real results that change humanity. History will judge which of these changed humanity for the better and which contributed to our downfall. Make no mistake, modern companies, antique companies, and historic companies have all altered the course of mankind forever. The results are profound. Yes, Shakespeare changed the English language. Picasso's Guernica provoked a visceral response to war, an impression that has lasted decades. One of the most prolific legacies of our modern time is that of Standard Oil and the family named behind it, the Rockefellers. Their wealth, influence, and impact persist to this day, with political implications at every level for over a century. The legacy of Standard Oil defines the past century of business structure and organization and the antitrust laws which affect current business to this day. Communities and people numbering in the millions have been directly impacted by the creation of Standard Oil in both positive and negative ways. John D. Rockefeller, the founder of Standard Oil, was a viral leader. His motto was to always try to turn every disaster into an opportunity. He even succeeded at this when the Supreme Court broke his monopoly in 1911. Rockefeller is also quoted as saying, quote, "I would rather earn 1% off 100 people's efforts than 100% of my own efforts," unquote. And while there is certainly a cynical way of interpreting this quote, the essence of viral leadership is the ability to create critical mass. Viral leadership leverages success. Viral leadership is important because it produces true freedom. It frees the leader of being the sole source of power and from being reliant on their own limited resources. The truth is, we only know what we know, and even though some of us are smart and know a lot, the collective knowledge base from manager, employees, customers, and the community are unleashed to transform businesses when viral leadership is applied. Henry Ford understood the power of viral leadership and how a collaborative think tank is much more creative than the single-minded ego. Quote, "I have a row of electrical push buttons on my desk, and by pushing the right button, I can summon to my aid men who can answer any question I desire to ask concerning the business to which I am devoting most of my efforts," unquote. By creating his, quote, mastermind group, the Ford legacy became what it is today. His invention of the Model T automobile in 1908 has had an impact on every person on the planet. Henry Ford and his mastermind team have created, developed, and improved the motor vehicle to what it is today and hold several patents within the automobile manufacturing industry. One of the foremost appeals to viral leadership is that it is exciting. The potential to impact so many lives in a positive way allows us to find joy in what we do. One can see beyond the drudgery of today's tasks and create a vision for the future. The excitement of viral potential unleashes now intentions and gives way to new thoughts, new relationships, and new ways of living. The popular restaurant chain Benihana gained its success by jumping on a now opportunity and has become the worldwide leader in tableside teppanyaki restaurants. With the business failing and just days before closing for good, the owner of a small coffee shop in Tokyo carelessly left the door from the kitchen to the dining room propped open. On this day, a small group of local businessmen stopped in for lunch. With the door to the kitchen propped open, the customers could see the cooks hard at work. The businessmen were amazed and highly entertained by the impromptu cooking show they then witnessed. They were astounded and amazed at the razzle-dazzle knife skills these modern-day samurais possessed. The very next day, this same group of businessmen returned for yet another show. Only on this day, they brought a larger group of colleagues with them to witness and enjoy this astounding culinary art experience. The following day, the dining room was filled with customers, and the crowd demanded the grill be brought out into the dining room. The rest, as they say, is history. I have always said that, ultimately, the purpose of leadership is happiness, and viral leadership provides a fast track to human happiness. We want to be happy at work, and when an enthused team begins working together to capture the moment and create something of meaning, the workplace is a happy place. When I come home from work happy, the happiness exudes to my family, and life is just better for all of us. Even my dog Wang Sai is happy when I'm happy. Viral leadership is a source of happiness, and that happiness can, in and of itself, can become transformational and sustaining. Do you want to be a viral leader? Then take the first step. Set an intention. Set the intention to be your best and to be observant and to take action. The End. Copyright 2018, Dr. Richard K. Nongard and R.J. Banks. Narrated by R.J. Banks. For voiceover and narration information work, contact robbanksvoiceovers.com. To invite the authors to be a guest on your podcast, radio, or TV show, or to discover how to bring the authors of this book to your company, visit viralleadership.com or richardnongard.com.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.